you all for coming out this morning, and I want to thank the organizers for organizing such a wonderfully diverse conference. This talk will be on the subject of, in the category of astroparticle phenomenology, and this is work that I've done with my advisor, Maxine Perlstein. I changed the title from the one that's advertised because I wanted to emphasize a key point for you at the beginning that the rumors of the death of electroweak baryogenesis have been greatly exaggerated. In the standard model with the current lower bound on the Higgs mass, that rules out a strong first order phase transition, rules out electroweak baryogenesis. But when you look at beyond the standard model phenomenology, it opens up a whole new window. And I'm going to start by summarizing the baryogenesis challenge with a cartoon. The universe appears to be dominated by matter, despite the fact that matter and antimatter are nearly symmetric in the standard model. And this poses a challenge to theorists to come up with a dynamical mechanism that could have created this asymmetry in the universe. We've heard a number of talks here about the wonderful agreement between WMAP and Big Bang nucleosynthesis on the baryon asymmetry parameter, eta. And this gives phenomenologists a very precise target for generating the model of baryogenesis. There have been many creative ideas on this topic, with baryogenesis occurring at energy scales from the Planck down to energy scales that would be consistent with inflation and reheating. Leptogenesis and affect dying baryogenesis have received the most attention in the last 8 years or so. I'm going to talk today about electroweak baryogenesis. There are many nice reviews on this. So Sakharov is the grandfather of the study of baryogenesis in the context of particle physics, and he posited three criteria for any successful model of baryogenesis. Baryon number needs to be violated, C and CP have to be violated, and then there has to be some non-equilibrium dynamics involved. David Morrissey gave a wonderful talk on Tuesday and actually explained a complete mechanism for electroweak baryogenesis there. I want to just focus on reviewing the most commonly studied mechanism for getting the non-equilibrium dynamics at the electroweak scale. And that comes from first-order phase transition and the breaking of the electroweak symmetry around temperatures of the weak scale. And I'll be showing you a series of plots of the Higgs effective potential, where H here is the classical Higgs field. And the first thing I'll show you is a second order phase transition in which there's just a smooth adiabatic transition. The electroweak interactions are always occurring at a much faster rate than the Hubble expansion parameter, and everything remains in quasi-static equilibrium during the transition. For a first-order phase transition, as temperatures evolve down to about 100 GeV, there comes a point where these two minima are degenerate, and we define that as the critical temperature. Almost immediately, once the temperature falls below that critical temperature, the bubbles will nucleate in the universe, and there will be a transition from the vacuum there to the metastable vacuum to the true vacuum. Now, I want to define an important parameter here that I like you to keep in mind for the rest of my talk. At the critical temperature, we define the BEV at this asymmetric minima to be T1. And in order to successfully generate a baryon asymmetry and not have it washed out inside the broken phase of the bubbles, we have to make sure that scaleron processes cannot wash out whatever baryon asymmetry has evolved. And since that scaleron energy depends directly on that temperature-dependent BEV, the condition for a strong first-order phase transition that can successfully generate give you a successful dynamic baryogenesis scenario requires this ratio of V to T is greater than 1, and we're going to define that as C. In the standard model, with the current bound pigs, as I was saying at the beginning, the transition is second order. But in realistic mechanisms of electroweak symmetry breaking, they modify the ad hoc standard model Higgs potential, and the enlarged parameter space can allow for a strong first-order phase transition. Now, a precision measurement of the full TED, Lagrangian masses, the mixings, couplings, that would allow us to calculate the order of the phase transition directly. But that's a bit of a pipe dream on the order of the next, who knows how many years. But lacking that full Lagrangian, how can we determine, how much can we determine from the least data? And there's been a nice study by Brogy and Servant of the prospects for detecting gravitational relics of a first-order phase transition with LISA. We're going to consider collider physics phenomenology of this first-order phase transition, looking for simple observables that can be correlated to the order of the transition to C. And we choose the Higgs cubic coupling and propose this as one such observable. We define it in this way. And at tree level in the standard model, it's the usual. And our claim is that the Higgs cubic provides a model-independent collider probe of the sense of the viability of electroweak baryogenesis, and that models with a strong first-order phase transition exhibit order one deviations of the Higgs cubic coupling from its standard model value. There have been some very nice previous studies of just this very thing, including a study of low cutoff models by Brogy and Servant and James Wells here, two Higgs doublet models, Bacanino, Campero, Cut, and Seneca. We claim that this correlation of a strong first order phase transition with these large deviations in the Higgs qubit is generic for a broad class of beyond standard model physics. And to give you some evidence for this, we demonstrate this correlation between C and lambda 3, the order of the phase transition and the cubic coupling, by analyzing a series of toy models that we can match onto a broad range of beyond the standard model Higgs scenarios. And I'll talk about each of these in turn now. So in this first toy model, which we gave the most attention to, you have weakly coupled physics at the TED scale, and the Higgs is unmixed. There's only one Higgs. And we start in this model by just adding a single real scalar field to the standard model. And that modifies the effective Higgs potential, the zero temperature Coleman-Weinberg, only at loop level. We make sure that the mass for this new scalar field S is greater than zero so that it doesn't develop a VEV. And we write down the most general interaction consistent with this Z2 symmetry on the S to prevent the mixing. Now, introduce some technical terminology to Higgs physics. We're going to talk about the difference between a bumpy and a not bumpy potential at zero temperature. It turns out that when you add this Coleman-Weinberg addition at zero temperature, you can actually have not the familiar Higgs shape, but a bump. And that bump generally persists to finite temperature, which generically allows for a strong first-order phase transition. So when I... No, no, no. So these are our results, and what I plotted here are the C parameter versus lambda 3, where lambda 3 is normalized to the standard model value, and also the cubic coupling against the Higgs mass for strong C greater than 1 phase transitions. And the blue points are the ones that have a bump in them at zero temperature. The red points do not, but the red ones are, you know, a little more flatter than usual towards the origin, and that allows them to develop more of a bump at finite temperature. So, oh wow, my slides are pretty off center here. The experimental prospects at the SLHC go from 20 to 30%, 160 to 180 GeV Higgs. At the ILC, it's 20% there on the far left. And we basically see here that there, you know, there is a strong correlation between the order of the phase transition and the cubic coupling, where all the points above this line here exhibit strong first order phase transitions. And if the Higgs falls in a light enough range, then we should be able to observe these deviations at the LA, at the super LHC and the ILC. I want to make sure it's clear, though, that our claim only goes one way. You can't have enhancements to the cubic coupling and not get a first-order phase transition. So second-order phase transitions are not plotted here at all, but we did actually find second-order transitions with cubic deviations out to, say, 50%. And again, you know, no first-order phase transition. So really, we have sort of a falsifying proposition here, where if we don't observe an enhancement to the cubic coupling at these colliders, then it makes the chances of electroluminogenesis very small.
And so, what's the favorite range for the scale of Mach, some of the Mach?
Oh, okay. So we, in this scan, we took that mass from zero all the way up to 800 GeV.
Well, if it's near zero, you have much more spectacular signatures because the Higgs indicator of you guys.
Exactly. That's right. So, yeah, so let me comment on that. So, yeah, the singlet is, you know, half Higgs mass. You're going to observe Higgs to two scalars with this kind of interaction at the LHC well before we would ever be able to measure the cubic. But one thing we want to point out is that if the real scalar is greater than half the Higgs mass, it's going to be very difficult to detect it at all, except possibly through this enhancement to the cubic coupling.
I'm confused by this, so that you can have the scalar as heavy as 800 GeV and have some impact on the first order phase transition. It seems like nothing, does it?
We took it up to 800 because it starts to decouple at that point. In fact, it's
so you're saying that you have a single scalar at 800 GeV and it would still induce the first order phase transition in the room?
Yep. Just check the potential.
If there's a strong enough coupling.
Oh, because you push the coupling up.
Yeah, we do push the coupling up. So we scan this A from 1 to 8. And for stop saying the MSSM, this is effectively 3.5. Okay. I think it's really important to emphasize that this then is generalizable in principle to multiple scalars. And we actually have a simple scaling argument for models with n real or n over 2 complex identical scalars. We actually check the pattern continues for 2 non-identical scalars with different values for A and the mass. And we conjecture that it holds for n independent scalars. That seems reasonable. The one loop analysis we did is independent of the scalar's gauge charges. So it stops in the MSSM, decoupling limit, just one on mixed Higgs, or they could be we triple it in the little Higgs model. Next step was to add a SUSY-inspired boson fermion pair. We actually have a Dirac fermion and 4 real scalars. So sort of, you know, two chiral multiples on top of each other. And again, the assembly modifies the Cohen-Weinberg zero temperature at the loop level. And once again, we see the strong correlation between the order phase transition and the cubic coupling. However, there's a problem here to discuss. This would violate our claim. These points here along the black line give a strong phase transition without an enhancement to the cubic coupling. What's going on here is we have exact supersymmetry, this relation here between the scalar and the fermion masses. And at zero temperature, we have normalization of things in SUSY. But at finite temperature, you break the supertrace theorem, and you can have an enhancement from the bosonic degrees of freedom to the phase transition. So our point is that this is an accidental cancellation that would require substantial fine-tuning, since we're scanning for strong couplings here, relatively strong, and SUSY is broken by these large couplings to the standard model. Now, we moved on to look at modification to the standard model potential at tree level by a leading non-normalizable operator. And this has already been studied, proposed by Grojean Servant and James Wells here. And they also pointed out that this would give you an enhancement to the cubic coupling, that would be one signature. And for completeness, we wanted to include these plots here too. And there's a very strong correlation between C and lambda 3 here. This is the tree level relationship where you get a large enhancement to the cubic coupling from the ratio of e to the fourth over lambda squared and h squared. So,
can I ask you something? Are you allowed for the negativity of the quartic term or not?
Allowing for the negativity of the quartic coupling?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. So that basically is what drives it.
Theory, right? Because you match to the lower and higher balance.
And it's reasonable because you can have a UV completion.
It's a virtual reason.
It's a little less innocent than it looks like.
It's actually not much different than this, but
it's all you're
going to use.
They've also analyzed this now at one loop level, including the one loop effects, which we did not include of the non-normalizable operator, and found some interesting results. So the final example I'm going to consider here is the most general normalizable potential with just one additional scalar. We've removed the Z2 symmetry on the scalar field, and you get mixing in the Higgs sector. There are two Higgses, and they'll both acquire BEVs, and the order parameter for the phase transition is a linear combination of those two classical fields. H1 in this parameterization is the most doublet-like, and so we consider it to be the Higgs and look at its enhanced lambda 3 value. And
so there's
there's a much larger parameter space here. We get much more the blob for the plots. And in this scan, which we chose to be roughly consistent with electric precision constraints taken from a study recently by Profumo, Ramsey, Volsov, and Stroganasi, and we found here a reduction in the cubic coupling for strong first order phase transitions. You can also scan regions of the parameter space that will give you enhancements. And so both enhancements and suppression are possible. Small corrections would only occur due to accidental cancellations, again, between two large contributions. And if we fix all the parameters except the mixing coefficient, you recover a very tight correlation between C and lambda 3. And but again, if the Higgs is mixed, we're going to see deviations from the standard model Higgs reduction cross sections and branching ratios well before we're going to observe this lambda 3 value. But we just, our main point is that there's this strong correlation and it persists. So just to sum up, Barnes-Kruskal cancellations, there has to be a large deviation in the cubic coupling from the standard model value in order to achieve a strong for shorter phase transition and make electroweak baryogenesis viable. And the typical order one deviations are large enough to be probed at the super LHC and the ILC. And it would be very interesting to pursue this angle on phenomenology for a variety of BSM physics models and consider whether there are, you know, a small number of quantities we can measure to an accessible level of precision to determine the order of the phase transition. And again, I'm just going to reference David Morrissey's talk. They actually, you know, consider not just the order of the phase transition, but the CP violation, all of that, to look at the window on electroweak baryogenesis in the NSSM. And, I think there could be more studies along those lines. So, thanks.
How large is the cosmological abundance of similar pairs, especially in the your first example? Cosmological abundance, single T.
Yes. The single T, the cosmological abundance. I'm sorry, I guess I don't know the answer to that question.
I know the answer.
Sorry?
I know the answer. You okay. Can make it dark matter, but if you really play with a very, very large coupling, it will be lower than
what you're thinking of it is like a dark matter, like a relic. Okay, well, we don't consider whether it's stable or not. So we don't sort of worry about it.
In the case of a bump potential, worry at all about actually getting the phase transition to go?
Right, so we did not calculate the nucleation temperature. In the Grunjung's recent paper by Delaney and Grunjung and Wells, they do look at that for the second twin model on. But generically, you expect that because the Hubble scale is, you know, the electroweak scale squared of the Planck scale, and you're comparing that to the rate for nucleations. In general, the rates for nucleation are going to be much faster than the Hubble scale, and so you expect it to nucleate almost immediately once it drops below that critical temperature. So the nucleation studies are important, but they shouldn't change our results so much.
Well, then, let's thank speaker.